Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. Today's show is Victims, Heroes, and Sacrifices.
Yes.
Is that it, Allison?
Yes.
All right. This is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry, and this is on 100.1 on your FM dial on KRUU FM, solar-powered QRU-FM. And you could look up archives on KRU at KRUUFM.com. You could also look up old shows by going to ardentcenter.com. So go to the website, ardentcenter.com. And you could go to the media tab and see YouTube playing of a bunch of these old shows. And you could also email me directly, scott@ardentcenter.com, for more information, insights, directions, thoughts, or trying to get a hold of Allison if her email's way too complicated, which she'll give you in a little bit. So we're again on with Allison talking about philosophy. Allison, who's so incredible, a powerful and amazing Jyotishi in Fairfield, where we're broadcasting from.
Hi, Terry.
Hello. All right. So talk to us. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about victims, heroes, and sacrifices. In our last show, you brought up the point that people who feel like victims are dispirited and therefore not in a good position to change anything about themselves or their lives. And so you, as a psychotherapist, are motivated to help the person see a different perspective on their situation so mm-hmm. they can stop feeling like a victim.
Right. Or at least have some empowerment over the victimness that they're trapped in. That, again, they're in their wheelchair. They might not have a choice over their terrible circumstances. But the question isn't, I get people that are even psychotic at times trying to justify their terrible, terrible experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Which are real or not real, and they're wanting to know, are they real? Please justify my experiences. My mm-hmm. partner, my world, my this is so bad. My job is not to justify.
Maybe it is. See, this is where we disagree, because sometimes people just simply want to have another human being recognize their reality.
Absolutely. No, I got that part, and I agree with that. It's essential. But I think I've told people this story before on this show. I once had a psychotic client who was in a full-blown psychotic episode when he came to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts seeing these devils and these demons flying around the room.
Mm-hmm.
And they were attacking him.
Mm-hmm.
And he had come to see me because the medical doctor at the clinic that I was at Rush, where I had been trained uh-huh. in Chicago, and the doctor said the client wouldn't come see him, and he didn't know what to do. But if he didn't come see the doctor, this client was in serious jeopardy to be even alive, because he needed medication so badly
mm-hmm.
for his condition. So instead of being the arbitrator of what's real or not,
right.
so to speak, and I could have this with somebody who's fully psychotic, who's clearly not real, or in a relationship where they want me as judge and jury of what is real and what is not.
Mm-hmm.
My job, I don't see it as that.
Mm-hmm.
For this client, for example, my thing is empowerment to sit there and say, if you perceive these demons, devils, so to speak, flying around the room, what do you do about them?
Mm-hmm.
Which is always my question, my mm-hmm. one and only question. And I say, if I see these terrible demons, I call it the flaming sword of Michael to protect me and to fight back and to do something. And what do I create? How do I create that good spirit to be there?
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing something. Even if the person's completely and truly making it up, does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter.
Or maybe he is perceiving a reality that I'm not perceiving. What do I know?
Right.
How do I know? I'm not judge and jury. I am not God.
Right.
I'm just here to help people make a difference in their lives, given where they're at.
Right. Right.
Okay. And so maybe they're in this situation with their partner, and their partner is, they're saying they want justification. This partner is doing this terrible thing.
Right. And sometimes acknowledging that can be the doorway to freedom, or the doorway to greater acceptance, depending on the case of the situation. Part of this on the you know, the victim hero mentality, it's often the same people with a different view of what happened to them. For instance, if you come home as a war hero, you know, there is very badly scarred or wounded, but you feel like you had an internal locus of control when you went for that experience. You are more likely to be able to digest it better than if you feel like you went involuntarily and got slaughtered.
Yes. Or if I didn't, you know, what grates often the PTSD in veterans, which I happen to treat a lot, is not the terrible experience of somebody firing at me. To me, that's a contextual experience. If I went to war right now and somebody was firing at me, I'm sorry, I would be peeing in my pants. I am not that brave. I don't know what to do. I haven't been trained, and I don't have the resiliency to fight like that. You know, or maybe I will. I don't know. But if I'm trained to do that, that's not what's causing me. Oh, I've got a gun in my hand. Of course this person's firing at me. I've got a gun and I'm firing at him. I'm expecting that. What kills somebody is what they don't expect.
Yes, that's often what kills us, is what we don't expect.
Absolutely. And it's that lack of control that I don't know what to do. I can't, there's the one place where extreme codependency is absolutely necessary is that circumstances, because my life has to mean less than my team. And everybody on my team has that understanding where we're there to, even if I hate my, that guy's, my buddy's guts, because he's a terrible person. In that team environment, his life is worth more than my life because he represents that team. The problem is what happens when I can't save my buddy? What happens when I now come home and I have that contrast where that extreme codependency is a destructive force?
Right.
Because my partner can never have that because they need to have more freedom, more possibility. My children can't be that codependent on me because then I stifle them.
Well, war is a, you know, war is a very interesting spiritual metaphor. Now, the practicalities of war and modern warfare are the practical situation and the metaphor may not always work,
of course,
well together, because I would not want to insult people who have been to war by presuming to know more about their experience than they do. But in terms of war as a metaphor, this is the point about victims, heroes, and sacrifices, is that, you know, God is essentially a communist. So this is a zero-sum game. If we're all one, it's a zero-sum game. This is a point that Krishna makes in the Bhagavad Gita, that every life is a sacrifice unto life. There's no extra, there's no, because it's a closed system of one, of unity. Therefore, this notion of sacrifice being the actual very foundation of all life, matter, consciousness is embedded in Vedic philosophy, and I think is a useful point to consider, you know, victims versus heroes, because in one sense, everyone and everything is a sacrifice, and so one's life is supposed to be a sacrifice. Whether to one's teammates or to, you know, one's family or to one's country or to one's divine God, that this notion that there is, that one of the problems in this time period we live in is that there's such a lack of understanding about this that that's kind of what has polarized people into, or polarized humanity into these kinds of extremes where one person lives off the blood, sweat, and tears of, you know, many, many beings.
So how do you achieve balance from your perspective then? Because there has to, like the spectrum between codependency and narcissism, that there's this balance point. And that balance point changes depending on the contextual circumstances I'm in. Again, the metaphor of war, the metaphor of I'm on a football team or some other team sport. So it's a much milder degree, but, you know, I'm willing to sacrifice bunt, let's say, on a baseball team so that my partner could get around the bases. I'm willing to fault myself for the bigger picture, to pass the ball so somebody else can make the goal. In a relationship, there has to be some notion of I surrender to my partner. But if I'm only surrendering to my partner, then who am I?
Well, you're either an extremely devoted, highly spiritually realized being, or you're a very angry, suppressed, ordinary being.
Exactly. And most of us are not that high. And so this is balance, right? You're liking this, aren't you?
Yes. The balance, though, even balance is, you know, balance is a blessing. If one can get a hold of balance, that's an enormous blessing.
But go on. Okay. So, you know, God's a communist, as you say, and life is for life. How did you say that? I love how you phrase that.
I said, God is a communist and life is a sacrifice unto life.
Explain more about what that means.
It means that consider your own life. Well, first, you know, there are several starting premises to this. One is that everything has consciousness. Even, you know, this table has some portion of divine consciousness in it. Now, because it's a relatively inert object, it has less consciousness than you, presumably.
Presumably. We're not sure about that at the moment. Yeah.
And me. Certainly.
No. You definitely have more consciousness than this table.
I would say that the reverse. So, but that you know, everything has consciousness that is then embedded in matter and energy. That the three are actually moving together, consciousness, matter, and energy. So in order to create the grand pageant of life, everything that is, you know, sentient is made of something else. Think of all the food you've eaten. Think of the mountains of food you've eaten in your lifetime.
Mountains. I don't have to think that. I could think about the buffet I'm thinking of having after this.
So all those beings, all those little carrots and beets and turnips, they all sacrifice their lives so that to support yours.
Or let's say a more beautiful notion of an American Indian from historic times who would kill the buffalo or the elk or the whatever, and they would almost say a prayer for thanking that being for sacrificing themselves. And they would try and honor that being by living a better life and doing something with that energy that they're now taking.
Yes.
Which is very different than eating a piece of beef from a production line where that animal was stuck in a pin that never got to move and was fed food that wasn't appropriate for that being to begin with. What is that doing to you?
You know, arguably very, very not good things for your consciousness because as we were saying before, everything carries an energetic imprint. So when you eat that beef, you are also imbibing both the consciousness of the suffering that went into making that cow. You are, because every single cell of its body will be stamped with the imprint of its intelligence, not meaning literally smart, but meaning of its consciousness, so that you will be imbibing that kind of suffocating imprisonment into your own body, which will, you know, increase your own negativity. Plus, you are also, from a Vedic standpoint, participating in the karma, which means that somewhere down the road in this, you're likely to be on the other end of the experience.
Wow. Okay. I'm just kind of blown away. So let's say I don't buy this whole cosmic thing. I'm a farmer. I'm a pig farmer. And I believe, you know, I'm just trying to make some money. I'm just trying to raise my thing so I could raise a family. And I'm just trying to get money. And I don't care if the pigs aren't real. You know, I'm just raising them. I don't care if they're humanely raised or not. I'm raising them in a way where I can make money. So I'm raising them in a pen where they don't move around, where I'm going to fatten them up as much as possible, that we could talk about the difficulties in CAFOs and, you know, that sort of circumstance. Okay, but I'm just trying to survive. I'm just trying to do my will. What's wrong with me? So forget about all this cosmic BS, okay? Sorry to call. By the way, you're listening to KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial. Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry as we talk about cosmic BS. And we're on with Allison. What's our topic today?
Heroes, Victims, and Sacrifices.
I love that title. Okay. I want a book by that title, by the way. We're going to do a book on this. All right. So then the question then is, what? So let's say I don't buy into it.
Well, then you don't buy into it. Then you don't. You probably don't have a question.
Okay, but I still have experiences that I'm not aware of.
But that's a being not like. Is this a being who's come to you to ask you questions, or he's at home on the farm farming?
Okay, no. Let's say they're coming to me because they're in a relationship that's not working. It has nothing to do with anything else, and they're not getting that who they are influences the relationship that they're now having difficulty with. They're just anxious or depressed or having a terrible relationship.
Right.
Then what they're not getting is who they are. Is it creating that circumstance?
Well, maybe it's not who they are so much as, you know, the what they're doing, the circumstances they find themselves in. This is why, as Khalil Gibran says, you know, it's your pain that begins to break the shell of your understanding. Because it's usually through pain and suffering that humans start asking questions and expanding their consciousness. So if someone comes with a question, then you have to provide, or you don't have to, but ideally you can provide some type of answer that elevates their consciousness to some degree and feels, you know, reasonably appropriate to that being, something they can digest or accept.
So for them, maybe they sit there and say, okay, I'm anxious or I'm depressed or I'm having this terrible relationship. So maybe what they can digest is some sense of self-control, that maybe they need to shift to their being and have some openness to the world around them, or to at least their partner, or to what they're creating. And they don't...
Our theoretical CAFO farmer who's now in a terrible marriage.
Yes. He's not so theoretical. I have lots of these people I've seen.
So you're saying that due to his miserable relationship, he's willing to do what?
He's willing to at least come into therapy because the bottom line is he doesn't want to get a divorce.
And what does that have to do with the pigs?
Well, and that would be a question. For him, he would see no direct correlation. And I would say, look, if you're treating these animals like the people around you, that they don't have consciousness, they don't have purpose, they don't have an energy, they don't have anything, that if there's no sense of understanding something bigger to what you're creating, it's the same sort of implication of the depression, which is the anger turns inwards and beating yourself up, that there's something missing from your life,
right?
You know, and maybe you'll go on and keep being a farmer, and maybe, you know, you farming or in the way that you do is serving you. But I would say there's something bigger at stake.
Yes.
And who you are and how you connect to what you're doing matters.
Right.
And to get that what you do actually does have implications for you. If I smoke, you know, it's not a surprise in 20 years that I'm going to have cancer and I'm going to die. It shouldn't be this sad thing. I have chosen that reality.
Or it's been assigned to you.
As we've said before in our previous... Please listen to our previous recordings. They're great.
Exactly. I mean, you know, humans stand at an interesting junction. First of all, because they vary so much in terms of, you know, level of awareness, one could say, and approach to life. But, you know... So you essentially stand at a position, Terry, where you want to impart some kind of increased consciousness to people, right?
Yes.
Or freedom and awareness and acceptance of their experience and ability to navigate their own life.
Absolutely.
Right. And so the question, you know, which is a very Ayurvedic one, is often just digestion. What can people actually digest? Because raised in a very different framework, you know, they're not going to, people, this person is not necessarily, this theoretical CAFO farmer is not necessarily going to be able to accept or imbibe the information that you think that his depressing marriage is a direct result of the way he's farming pigs. That there's no, that's why the genius of being any kind of teacher and counselor is to help people make these links in their own minds by whatever kind of genius method or not genius method you can come up with. That doesn't mean that you can't help him in the situation to lessen his suffering. I mean, all systems of counseling are basically directed at lessening human suffering.
Absolutely.
But it is not everyone's destiny to see the world in the same terms.
Absolutely. And I think that becomes a problem with people are so gung-ho about saving the world, regardless of their religious or spiritual perspective. I am here to save everybody in my way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, accept Jesus, otherwise you go to hell. Right? Accept this meditation path. Accept this way of whatever it is.
Right.
It becomes a very much us versus them mentality. You're either for us or you're against us.
Right.
You're either on my path or you're on no path.
Right.
And I'm not here to tell that farmer that he's bad and wrong.
Right.
All I'm trying to do is say, maybe there's other insights to who you are and what you do actually has implications for your life that maybe getting how you do what you do will change.
Right.
And could have more greater possibility.
Right.
So how does somebody then become a hero in our circumstance?
Well, it depends on who we're talking about, because what I'm saying is that everyone is a sacrifice. So again, this sort of prejudice around the good means that, like, for instance, I always go back to Hitler. People want to posit Hitler as an aberration rather than part of the divine plan. Everyone accepts that Jesus was a part of the divine plan, but as a general rule, people don't accept
well,
that.
Well, so you're just talking yin and yang here or something greater?
What I'm talking about is that one position, one potential position as a victim is to understand that one has been a sacrifice. You were, you know, take theodicy, the philosophy that God is always doing the greatest good possible for the greatest number possible.
Mm, mm.
But that means there's a portion that's getting hosed.
I like that.
But what if you fall in the hosed portion at this particular moment
in time?
Stop
hosing me.
Yeah. You know, like maybe you were hosed by God. Like maybe this is, you know, you were the sacrifice.
Okay, so then I come back to one of my favorite people of all times, Viktor Frankl, and he's mm-hmm. in the concentration camp.
Right.
And he's still got, okay, I'm part of the host.
Right.
You know, I'm a Jew who's in the concentration camps, and I am stuck here.
Right.
I have no control, zero control, if this guy's going to shoot me today or what can happen.
Right.
That doesn't mean I can't create purpose and meaning in my life, regardless of the contextuality that I'm stuck in. I don't know if my wife is still alive or not, but I am still going to create love.
Yes.
And so that's what you have control over. You don't have control over, am I part of that other cycle? And in fact, therapeutically, we often work with the shadow side.
Yes.
And, you know, that goes back to Jung. But it also, we could talk about Astagioli and we could talk about, you know, psychosynthesis, or we could talk about internal family systems where there's lots of different things, or my, particular work that I talk about in my theoretical work, where we're talking about this larger dimension of yes, yin and yang, but it's much, much greater than that. It's okay, so yes, I'm on the negative, but that isn't necessarily okay, let me rephrase this. In when we talk about Ayurveda, mm-hmm. we don't talk about this influence is necessarily being bad or good. Mm-hmm. It's what am I doing, right? How am I creating something from, you know, I'm pitta. Am I aggravating that condition or not?
Right.
It's not, am I having more pitta? Is that pitta aggravating me? And then how do I rectify that?
Right.
If I'm in a bad Jyotish period, what am I creating? So maybe I could do with this.
Maybe you're not creating anything. Maybe you're being created.
Absolutely. And then, as we talked about before, my choice is, do I surrender to that?
Right. And it's always individual. You have to have the individual in front of you to make that analysis. But I think we lost an essential point here in terms of, let me go back a ways. But this question, you know, this repeated question of how to synthesize, I think the basic question is how to synthesize difficult experience. And yes, the shadow realm and all that is held in the dark. So how does a human being who is holding a lot of that experience come back to a place where they can live with themselves more easily
Yes. In
the same essential human matrix that people who are not on the hosed end are living in?
Or let's say again, I am in the hosed end. What do I do then?
Well, one thing, I mean, you know, there's definitely using psychotherapy or some kind of tool if it is available to try to patch together.
Yeah, absolutely.
To try to patch together like a more functioning ego structure. But let's say you're not in a position to do that. Can you make sense of your experience in some other kind of way? So this point of, you know, possibly having an inimical relationship to God.
Lovely.
Yes. So, you know, in Vedic philosophy, you choose your relationship to God. God can be your friend. God can be your mother, your father, your child, your lover. You know, a whole variety of relationships can constellate themselves in. Classically, there are eight, although I think that there are an infinite variety of more available to people now. God could be your bro. But certainly,
I like that. God, you
God
are
is my bro.
God but, is my bro.
But God could also be your enemy, which may be a very useful spiritual position for someone who feels like they got hosed by God. Because then they're not locked out of divinity. Like they don't have to wonder why God did this to them. They know God's their enemy. And people can develop a very powerful focus on their enemy. So it becomes a starting place for a devotional relationship. This is a formal thing in Indian practice. It's called Viroda Bhakti, enemy devotion. Because hate is such a powerful emotion. It's a focusing emotion like love is. So it can become a focusing device for participating in a consciousness that can act as a healing for that being, even let's say that
from a negative perspective.
Yes.
As long as you don't get trapped by that negativity, as long as you don't get lost there, you know, again, coming back to something like couples relationship, and we only have another 30 seconds here, but you know, I've been divorced 20 years and I'm still blaming my ex for my problem. Focusing on the negativity in that circumstance keeps me entrapped in that relationship.
Well, the idea of focusing that negativity on God is that that very act will transform it into positivity.
It's because I could essentially transcend that negativity into making it productive.
Because humans start to embody what they focus on. If you focus on some aspect of divinity very intensely, you will come eventually to resemble that aspect of divinity.
Wow. All right. We're leaving it at that. Thank you, Allison. You are awesome as always. KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial. Mental Health Matters. Bye, everyone. Bye.